Story 1. I used to sleep behind an old train depot in East Cleveland. Cold concrete, no one around to bother you, and just enough wind cover from the overgrown brush lining the side. People think the worst part of being homeless is being hungry, but nah, it's the not knowing. What's around the corner, who's out there, what they might want. You learn fast that nightfall isn't your friend. This happened one summer when I wasn't technically homeless anymore, but I still lived rough, crashing at a friend's couch every now and then, squatting when I could. That night, my buddy Chris and I had planned to head up to the roof of an abandoned hospital near 105th. Just sit, drink a few beers, get some air. Real low key. It was one of those places that still had scraps of danger hanging off it, but that's kind of why we liked it. The front door was chained up tight, always had been. We had to go around back to this big concrete stairwell that wrapped up the outside of the building. Metal door at the bottom was welded shut, so the only way in was climbing onto the first landing by pulling yourself up over the ledge. Chris boosted me up. Soon as I got my leg over, I froze. There was a sleeping bag laid out on the landing, torn up, stained. Next to it, just sitting there like it was part of a place setting, was a steak knife. Long and thin, handle wrapped in black tape. I crouched real still, didn't touch anything. I called down softly, "Dude, someone's living here." Chris didn't answer right away. And then out of nowhere, I heard a voice say, "No, but it's cool." I spun so fast I lost my footing and had to catch the rail. My heart felt like it punched through my ribs. There was this guy standing halfway down the stairs, maybe late 20s, skinny, shirtless, wearing busted-up jeans and no shoes. He held his hands out like he was trying not to spook a dog. "Didn't mean to scare you," he said. Calm voice, but his eyes twitched like they were keeping track of invisible flies. I didn't say anything. Just kept my foot pressed on the knife handle in case he tried anything. I reached down and helped Chris climb up. Once we were both there, the guy sat on the top step like we were all just neighbors hanging out. It was awkward at first, but Chris cracked a beer and offered him one. He took it, popped it open, and we just talked. Nothing deep, just surface-level stuff. How long he'd been in the city, which buildings were still open to crash in, stuff about the weather. The kind of talk you do when you're trying to feel someone out without saying anything direct. He told us he'd been on the move for a long time. Said Chicago was too noisy and Detroit had too many watchers, whatever that meant. He had this habit of whispering things to himself mid-sentence, then snapping back into the convo like nothing happened. Then right after he asked Chris for another beer, he looked at me and said, "You guys are human, right?" I kind of laughed, thinking it was a joke. But he didn't smile. I hate when I find out they're not. The aliens. You never know until you see them bleed the wrong color or peel their skin off. He looked me dead in the eyes. "They've been after me since Amarillo. Followed me here. I can smell them now sometimes. Hiding in people. Makes me think I should just kill everyone. Just to be safe, you know?" Chris didn't even move. Just froze with the beer half outstretched in his hand. My brain started screaming, "Get out now." But my body didn't want to move too fast. I said, real calm, "Yeah, man, we're human. No skin suits here. We were just checking the place out. We'll probably head out. Gotta be up early." He stared at me, and I swear to God, his eyes looked wrong. Not like alien wrong, just broken. Empty. Like a TV stuck between channels. Then he slowly reached for the beer and nodded once, and still staring. We backed up. Chris went first. I waited until he was halfway down the outer edge before I jumped off the landing behind him. Didn't look back until we were 50 feet away. Story 2. I was living behind a strip mall in Tacoma, Washington, back in 2012. The place had a busted fence on the far end that led into this small, overgrown drainage lot. Weeds up to your knees, broken shopping carts, beer cans, used needles. It wasn't exactly cozy, but it was dry, and the cops didn't patrol back there much. I had a little setup behind a rotting dumpster, stacked some pallets, made a spot to sleep. There was another guy who stayed nearby. Name was Daniel. He was maybe in his 50s, smoked constantly, always muttering about shadows moving wrong. Real paranoid guy. I'd see him walking in circles some nights, whispering to himself, shining this tiny keychain flashlight into the bushes like he was checking for eyes. We didn't talk much, but he didn't bother me, so I let him be. One night in early November, it was raining light but steady, and I couldn't sleep. Too cold. My tarp kept flapping in the wind, and every little sound was setting me on edge. I'd run out of smokes, and I remember Daniel usually had a few he was willing to trade, so I decided to go find him. His spot was just around the corner, past the loading dock of a closed-down mattress store. I called his name quietly. Nothing. Tried again a little louder. Still nothing. Then I heard this clicking sound. Not like a lighter or anything mechanical. It was soft, fast, and uneven. Like someone tapping their teeth together. At first I thought it was just some animal or Daniel talking to himself again. But then it stopped all at once. I stepped closer, and I saw his tarp had been torn open. Slashed right through the middle like someone had cut it with a box cutter. His things were still there. Sleeping bag, plastic bags full of soaked clothes, a cracked flashlight. But no Daniel. I was about to turn around and leave when I noticed something else. The mattress store's delivery door, which had been sealed shut for months with a rusted chain, was hanging open. Not wide, just a few inches. Enough to show the darkness inside. Now, I didn't want anything to do with that, but I also didn't want to just walk away if Daniel was in there hurt or having some kind of episode. I took out my own flashlight, dim as hell, and pointed it through the gap. Couldn't see anything. I said, "Daniel, you in there?" Right then, something moved. Quick, just out of the beam. Could have been a rat. Could have been him. But what got me was the smell. It hit me like a wall. Mildew, piss, and something worse. Like wet copper. Blood, maybe. Old and sharp. I pulled the door open a little more. Inside, the room was mostly empty except for some discarded furniture. Stained couches, a busted metal frame from a twin bed. I stepped in just a little, just enough to see more of the room. That's when I saw him. Daniel was crouched in the far corner, facing the wall. His back was to me, and he was completely still. I mean, unnaturally still. Not shifting or swaying. Just locked. I couldn't even see him breathing. I said, "Hey, man, you good?" He didn't move. I took one more step inside, and that's when the door slammed shut behind me. Hard. I whipped around, dropped my flashlight. The beam spun wild for a second, hit the ceiling, then the far wall. And that's when I saw it. There was something else in that room. It was standing right next to Daniel, but it wasn't touching him. It was just leaning down, watching him from maybe an inch away, like it was studying him. Its arms were way too long, bent at the elbows like broken sticks. Head too big, kind of drooping. No clothes, no hair, just slick, grayish skin. And the worst part, its face wasn't right. No eyes, just this wide, flat slit where the mouth should have been, stretching open and shut in that same clicking rhythm I'd heard outside. It didn't look at me. It just slowly turned its head toward me without moving the rest of its body. Just the head, like it rotated on a different axis than a human neck should. And that clicking stopped. That silence, I'll never forget it. Then it smiled. Not with a mouth, but with its whole face. The skin pulled back, tight, like plastic warping in heat. Daniel still hadn't moved. I ran, full sprint. I hit that door so hard it came off the hinge. Didn't stop running until I was a mile away. Next morning, I came back with another guy who sometimes scavenged copper nearby. Daniel's spot was still torn. The mattress store door sealed shut again, chained back in place like it had never been touched. Daniel never came back, ever. People say maybe he just moved on. Maybe he got picked up. Maybe OD'd somewhere. But I don't believe that. I know what I saw. I never went near that block again. Never even walked by. Some places, some things, you don't go looking for twice. Story 3. I was in Stockton when this happened. Not the best city to be sleeping rough in, but I'd been bouncing between counties since I was a kid, and by the time I was 17, I'd stopped caring where I ended up as long as I wasn't freezing to death or getting jumped for my shoes. This was late fall, still technically California, but the wind off the Delta cuts deep at night. Especially when you're just a blanket and a hoodie away from pneumonia. That night I was walking down Fremont, headed toward the levee, thinking I'd sleep behind this busted-up storage shed near the water. Not a soul out. Dead quiet. Just the wind and the occasional sound of bottles clinking from somewhere far off. Most nights I didn't care about being alone. Being alone usually meant safer. But that night had a different kind of quiet, one that pressed down on your ears like a vacuum. I passed this busted-ass corner store, long boarded up, spray paint all over the outside, windows like spider webs under the boards. There was this narrow alley beside it, and as I got close, I heard someone whispering from inside, just a few words low and sharp, like they were pissed but trying not to be heard. I stopped. That wasn't normal. Nobody ever whispers when they want something on the street. They yell, they curse, they make noise. Whispering is off. Whispering means it ain't meant for you, or it is. I should have kept walking. God, I wish I did. But I paused trying to listen. I don't know why. Maybe I was too tired to make smart choices. Or maybe I just figured if someone needed help, I couldn't just pretend I didn't hear it. That kind of thinking gets you hurt out here. So I edged closer to the alley and peeked in. Empty, I mean it. The alley was totally empty. Trash cans, broken pallets, random old tires, but no people. The whispering had stopped too. Dead silence again. I turned back toward the street, and someone was standing in front of me. Not up in my face, not super close, but there. Middle of the sidewalk. No noise, no footsteps. Just there. A man, maybe. Tall, hoodie pulled tight, pants soaked at the bottom. But the weirdest part, his feet weren't facing me. His whole body was turned away, back toward the street like I wasn't even there. He was just standing. I didn't say anything. I didn't move. I just looked. Something in me knew not to say a damn word. Then he tilted his head, not turned, tilted, like sideways, too far, like his neck wasn't built right. Still didn't look at me, just tilted. I started stepping back, one foot behind the other, slow, deliberate, trying not to make a sound. I'd seen meth heads do weird shit before, seen schizophrenics throw fists at shadows. But this wasn't like that. This was something else, something colder. I was almost to the alley's edge when he moved. He didn't walk, he twitched. One second he was standing, the next he was 5 feet closer. Same position, same turned away body, still facing the wrong direction. I didn't hear him, didn't see emotion. He was just closer. I froze, my hands started shaking without me telling them to. My mouth went dry, and my body locked up like it was trying to disappear. He tilted again, this time the other side. Crack, I heard it, like something broke in his neck. And I swear on my life, I heard that whispering again, but now it was coming from inside my ears, like someone was behind my eardrums, whispering directly into my head. Don't leave yet. I ran, didn't look where I was going, didn't care, just bolted like a wild animal. I jumped trash cans, kicked over a shopping cart, almost ate shit tripping over a curb, and still I didn't stop. Didn't even slow down until I hit this old Jack-in-the-Box on Wilson Way that still had lights on. Banged on the window, scared the guy mopping the floor half to death. He let me sit in the corner until morning, didn't ask questions, just handed me a cup of water and left me alone. I didn't sleep. Couldn't. Every time I closed my eyes, I saw that figure, head bent wrong, whisper crawling into my skull. That thing wasn't human, or maybe it used to be, but not anymore. I never went back to that part of town. Story 4. I was staying in a half-collapsed gas station just outside of Albuquerque, New Mexico. I was 24 at the time, newly homeless after getting kicked out of my sister's place. It was one of those places no one paid attention to. Burnt out signage, busted pumps, weeds growing through the concrete. But it had a roof and three mostly solid walls, and that was enough for me. I had been sleeping there for maybe 3 weeks, just me and my sleeping bag, some canned stuff, and a half-wrecked radio I'd found in a dumpster. The gas station was far from the main road, but close enough that I'd see truckers passing by at night. Nobody ever stopped. Nobody ever noticed I was even there. One night I was lying in my sleeping bag, eating a cold can of chili, and listening to static on the radio. It was around 2 a.m., cold as hell. I remember my breath fogging up and the wind whistling through the big cracked windows that faced the front lot. I had my back against the wall, facing the opening, like always. I never slept facing the wall. It's a stupid way to die if someone sneaks up on you. Anyway, I'm sitting there about to drift off when I hear what sounds like gravel crunching, like slow, heavy footsteps across the lot. I kill the radio, dead quiet. I hear it again. Crunch, crunch, crunch. I sit up, trying not to make a sound, and peek over the broken ledge where the windows used to be. There's a man walking across the lot. Not a cop, not another homeless guy. Something was off. He was tall, taller than anyone I'd seen in a long time. And he moved like he was dragging his feet, but there was no limp. He was wearing this long coat that almost touched the ground, and it wasn't flapping in the wind like it should have been. It just hung there, stiff. I should have called out, maybe asked if he needed something, but I didn't. Something in my gut just said don't. So I slid down behind the ledge, slow as I could. Heart was pounding. I couldn't hear him anymore, just the wind. I sat there holding my breath for what felt like forever. Then, slam. Not a gunshot, not a car backfire. A slam like metal against concrete. It came from the back of the building. I froze. That side was boarded up, had been for years. I checked it myself. There was no way in back there. Another slam. Closer. I grabbed my bag and started crawling toward the side exit. I wasn't thinking, just moving. That instinct kicks in, like you're being hunted and your body knows it before your brain catches up. As I reached the edge of the station, I glanced back. There he was, inside the gas station, standing right where I'd been laying. I still don't understand how he got in. He wasn't there when I left the sleeping bag. Swear on my life. I hadn't heard the front. Nothing. Just there. He was facing the wall where I'd been lying, but he wasn't moving. Not a twitch. I could barely make out his face in the moonlight through the shattered window, but something wasn't right with it. The shape was wrong. It looked flat. Not like deformed flat, but like it had no features. Just a smooth, pale surface where a face should have been. I didn't stick around. I ran. Didn't even grab my other stuff. Just bolted down the road until I was half a mile away. I hid in a drainage pipe the rest of the night, shaking so bad I thought I was going to puke. I didn't sleep, didn't go back to that place ever again. I've never told anyone about that night, mostly because I still don't know what the hell I saw. Maybe I was exhausted. Maybe I was sick. Maybe it was some sick prank. But I know what I felt, and I've never felt anything like that since, not even close. Story 5. I never liked talking about this. I got sober 7 years ago, got a tiny apartment in Tacoma, Washington, and started piecing my life back together. I'm proud of that. But every time I walk under an overpass or hear rain tapping on metal, I remember that night. And I remember what I saw. It was 2014, late October. I was sleeping rough then, rotating between abandoned buildings and a spot under the I-5 overpass just outside downtown. It wasn't the safest place, but it was dry, and no one really bothered you unless you had something they wanted. I didn't. That night was cold, even for Washington. I'd managed to find a half-burnt fleece blanket from the Goodwill dumpster, and I'd curled up next to the concrete wall under the bridge, out of sight of the road. You start to sleep light when you're homeless. Any sound, any movement, and you're up. But that night I woke up before anything even happened, like something nudged me awake from the inside. I sat up real slow and checked around. Nothing at first, just the hum of traffic above and the soft hiss of the wind pushing through the pillars. Then I noticed the guy. He was standing just beyond the reach of the highway light, maybe 20 feet away. Too still. I remember thinking, he's gonna rob me. I grabbed my bag and tucked it close. Hey, I called out, trying to sound firm. No answer. He didn't move, just stood there with his back half turned, like he was looking off toward the support beams. Man, I don't want any trouble, I said louder. Still nothing. Then, without turning around, he said something. But I couldn't make out a word of it. It sounded like he was speaking underwater, Garbled, slow, like a tape being warped. The voice didn't match his shape. It was too deep, too layered, like more than one voice speaking at once. I stood up, heart pounding, and took a step back. "Just leave, all right?" I shouted. He started to turn toward me, and that's when I noticed something was wrong. His arms were too long. I mean, they hung almost to his knees. His body looked stretched, like someone pulled his limbs out and then stuffed him back into human clothes. And the closer he turned to face me, the more the air felt wrong. Thick, like I was underwater too. Then I saw his face, or what should have been his face. There were no features, just skin. Pale, tight skin like wax. And it twitched, like it was trying to form eyes or a mouth, but kept glitching, resetting every second. I stumbled back and slammed into the pillar behind me. His head tilted at a sick angle, fast, like it snapped sideways without moving the rest of him. He took a step forward. I dropped my bag. I didn't even feel myself move. I just remember running full speed across the gravel, slipping, getting back up. I made it to the opposite side of the overpass, where there were chain-link fences and some overgrown weeds. I looked back. He was right behind me, but not walking, floating, just barely above the ground, head still cocked, arms dangling like broken sticks. I screamed. I don't remember what I screamed, probably nothing that made sense, and I kept running. I didn't stop until I hit the edge of a gas station parking lot, and the bright lights soaked me in yellow. He wasn't there anymore. No sound, no footsteps, no heavy breathing behind me. Just gone. A clerk came outside, saw me panicking, and asked if I was okay. I tried to tell him, but I couldn't get the words out. He ended up calling the cops, probably thought I was tweaking or having a psychotic episode. They didn't arrest me, just told me to move on. I didn't go back to the overpass, ever. I slept behind a church for a few nights after that, then in a shelter. Believe me or not, I don't care. But if you're ever sleeping rough in Tacoma, don't stay under that overpass. People say it's cursed. They say a man hung himself there in the 80s and was never found. I didn't know that at the time. But maybe that wasn't a man anymore. Maybe it was something else wearing his skin, still figuring out how to look human. Whatever it was, it only happened once. And once was enough. Story 6. I was living behind an old medical supply warehouse in Wilmington, Delaware, the kind of place where the streetlights flicker like they're trying to die. I'd been sleeping under a rusted loading dock, quiet spot, barely anyone came around after dark. A guy named Nate, older, used to camp nearby too, but he vanished a few weeks before this happened. People said he got picked up or relocated, but I wasn't sure. We didn't talk much, just nodded. Smoked sometimes, shared food if we had extra. Anyway, one night in October, cold, misty, I found an old key card just lying in the gravel near the back door of the building. The warehouse had been shut for years, boarded up windows, graffiti, the works. No power, no reason to go in. But I got curious, stupid maybe. But when you've been sleeping under the same rotted wood for weeks, boredom makes your brain itch. The key card worked. The lock clicked. I remember that part clearly, that soft mechanical snick. I stood there for a second thinking maybe I shouldn't, but I pushed it open. Inside, the air was thick, like it hadn't moved in years. It smelled like mold and old bandages. My flashlight flickered. I had this crappy little LED thing I bought from a gas station. It was weak, but enough to see a narrow hallway lined with broken office chairs and tipped over filing cabinets. I stepped in. The door closed behind me on its own. No breeze, no slope, just slam. I jumped, spun around, tried the handle. Locked, dead. My breath caught, but I told myself it was just the building settling or something. I kept moving. There was something off about the silence. It wasn't just quiet, it was dead. You ever been somewhere so silent it feels like the sound is being sucked out of your ears? I got to a room labeled sterilization. On a cracked plastic sign. I pushed it open and stepped in. The smell hit me first, stronger than before. Not rot, not piss. Chemical, metallic. My flashlight picked up gleaming metal trays and a big stainless steel sink with brown streaks running down into the drain. And above it, a mirror. I don't know why there was a mirror in a sterilization room, but there it was, fogged and cracked down the middle. I stared at my reflection for a second. I looked worse than I thought. Hair tangled, face pale, eyes wide. I turned to leave, but in the mirror I didn't. My reflection stayed, still looking forward, still staring into the glass, like I was frozen in time. My real body had already turned halfway to the door, but that damn image of me was just standing there, motionless. I blinked, shook my head, turned all the way around. And then it smiled. I didn't. I swear to God I didn't smile. My heart started racing. I stepped back, knocked into one of those metal trays, and it clanged loud enough to wake the dead. My reflection, no, not mine, started walking forward toward the glass. But not like a reflection, like it wanted to come through. And then it did. The surface of the mirror rippled like water, and it stepped forward, out of the glass, barefoot, same clothes, same face, except the eyes were black, hollow, like a deep well where something awful lived. It didn't say anything. It just walked toward me slow, like it had all the time in the world. I ran. I don't even remember hitting the hallway. I just remember the pounding of my feet, my breath burning, the flashlight bouncing in my hand. The corridor looked different, longer, darker, like it was changing while I ran. Doors that weren't there before, shapes in the shadows. Behind me, I heard the footsteps. No, my footsteps matched perfectly, like someone was copying me a split second behind. I ducked into a room that looked like a break room. Vending machine toppled over. Microwave smashed. I slammed the door, locked it with a broken broom handle, and backed into a corner. Silence, then tap, tap, tap on the other side of the door. A voice, my voice. I just want to switch. You've had your turn. I didn't answer. I couldn't. I pressed my back into the wall, shaking, staring at the door like it would explode open. Then I heard laughing. Not loud, not crazy, software familiar, like it had been waiting. I don't know how long I stayed in there. Eventually I passed out, maybe from fear, maybe from something else. When I woke up, the door was open. The hallway was empty. The building was quiet again. I left without looking back. I sleep by the freeway now. No walls, no mirrors, just cars. I don't trust my reflection anymore. Not after that night. Story 7. I never really talk about this, not because I'm ashamed, I've had plenty worse nights out there, but because I still don't know what the hell I saw, or heard, or if I was even meant to survive that night. I was living under the overpass just south of Denver, not in the tents by the highway where folks cluster up, but alone, a little deeper into the concrete, near one of those runoff tunnels. Most people don't like being that close to those things. They flood fast and you're easy to corner. But I like the isolation. You're less likely to get stabbed in your sleep that way. This happened in early January, and it was cold enough that I was burning plastic bottles for heat. I'd scrounged some ramen and a can of beans that day, and I was huddled up in my sleeping bag when I heard it. This low, wet, dragging sound from inside the tunnel. I figured it was rats at first, maybe a coyote. I banged a stick on the concrete and yelled, but it didn't stop. Instead, it got closer. Now, I'm not proud of this, but I've seen people get jumped before. I've seen guys crawl into those tunnels at night thinking they found a safe place and end up with their shoes stolen, or worse. So I stood up, grabbed the little knife I kept under my bag, and yelled again, "Yo, I'm staying here tonight. Keep it moving." No answer, just that sound, like wet cloth being pulled along the concrete, and now I could hear something else underneath it, breathing, not fast. Slow and deep, rhythmic, too loud for a person, almost like it was echoing off the inside of something big. I thought maybe it was a junkie, someone high, crawling in circles. That's happened. They get stuck in their own minds and end up half naked in the cold. So I lit the little flashlight I kept in my bag and pointed it down the tunnel. There was someone there. At first I thought he was crawling on all fours. But no, he was moving like that. Yeah, but not using his hands. He wasn't even touching the ground. His chest and chin were just skimming over the surface, like he was being pulled from the chest by something I couldn't see. His arms were limp, dragging behind him, and his eyes were wide open, locked right on me. I said, hey, man, are you all right? He didn't blink, just kept sliding closer, not fast, maybe a foot every couple seconds. The breathing was louder now, but it wasn't coming from him. His mouth wasn't even open. That's when I noticed there were drag marks behind him, fresh ones, but they weren't his. They were bigger, like something had come through before him, and it had claws, deep gouges in the concrete, evenly spaced, like whatever it was had four or six legs and moved low to the ground. I backed away from the tunnel mouth, slow. The air had this taste to it, like iron. Not blood exactly, but close. Something in me was screaming to run, but I kept thinking, maybe this guy's hurt. Maybe he OD'd and someone dumped him. But then he smiled. Not a normal smile. It was like his face wasn't used to it, like it cracked open in pieces. His eyes never blinked. The light from my flashlight flickered a second, and I swear to God I saw something right behind him in the dark. It was crouched so low it looked almost flat, but I saw the shape. Long arms or legs or whatever the hell they were, stretching out from the wall, and a mouth, a huge round mouth, ringed with what looked like bone. I dropped the flashlight. Everything went pitch black. I heard this sudden whoosh, like the air being sucked out of the tunnel, and then the dragging stopped. I didn't breathe, didn't move. I just crouched there with my back against the wall, shaking. I was sure it was going to grab me next, that I was about to be dragged off into that tunnel and nobody would ever even know I existed. But nothing happened. I sat there for maybe 10 minutes listening. Total silence. Then from the black, I heard a voice, whisper quiet, right in my ear. I couldn't tell if it was a man or a woman, but it said, you weren't chosen. I ran. I don't even remember grabbing my bag. I just bolted up the slope and didn't stop until I hit the gas station near the bus stop. I must have looked like a ghost. One of the clerks offered to call a shelter for me. I didn't care where I went. I just knew I wasn't going back there. Next morning, I went back with another guy, George. He used to stay near the scrapyard. We didn't see anything in the tunnel. Not the man, not the marks. But we did find my flashlight. The casing was crushed like someone had stomped on it with steel-toed boots or jaws. I never stayed under that overpass again. Hell, I stopped sleeping anywhere near tunnels. Period. Story 8. I'm not the kind of person who goes around talking about ghosts or spirits or any of that crap. I don't like attention, and honestly, I don't even like people. I've been living in a rundown apartment in Stockton for the last few years, but before that, I was homeless. 5 years straight, underpasses, old cars, alleyways, and abandoned trailers. Wherever I could crash and not get stabbed. That was my life. There's one night, though, just one. I try not to think about it too much. I don't tell people because either they don't believe me or worse, they do and look at me like I'm broken. But I'll tell you if you really want to hear it, just don't expect it to make sense. This was back in 2017, around mid-October. I was up near the outskirts of Reading, trying to head north before winter set in. Someone told me there was a trail that cuts through the hills and comes out near a campground where you could get food without too many questions. I never found the trail. What I did find was this dry, rocky stretch along the edge of a ravine. I didn't have a flashlight, just a half-dead phone with a cracked screen. It was almost midnight, and I remember because I kept checking the time, hoping morning would come faster. My feet were killing me, and it was cold as hell. That's when I saw it, this small, dark opening in the side of a rock wall. Looked like a cave. Nothing big. Maybe 5 feet high. Just wide enough to crawl through. I was desperate. It was windy as hell, and I didn't want to sleep exposed again. So I crouched down and shuffled inside. It wasn't deep, just about 10, maybe 12 feet in, and it opened up slightly into this pocket, like a natural little room. Dry floor, warmer than outside. That's all I cared about. I remember thinking, this isn't so bad. I laid my pack down, pulled my hoodie over my head, and curled up. Maybe 15 minutes later, I started hearing sounds. Not outside, inside the cave. Thought it might be the wind at first, but there was no breeze in there. It was more like whispering, real faint, like someone mumbling into a pillow. I sat up and held my breath. Nothing. Dead quiet. Then I heard it again, clearer this time. A voice, low, male, right behind me. I spun around, hit my head on the cave wall. Nothing there. I pointed my phone light around. Just rock and shadows. I waited, listened, silence again. I should have left. I know I should have left. But it was cold and I told myself I was just tired. That maybe my brain was screwing with me. I laid back down, but I didn't sleep. I just stared at the opening of the cave, waiting for something to move. Then I felt the floor shift under me. It wasn't like an earthquake. It was subtle, like something was crawling underneath the rock, like it was alive. I jumped up and pressed my hand to the ground. It stopped. I remember whispering to myself, "What the hell is this?" Then I heard breathing, right next to my ear. But no one was there. I swear to God, it was like someone was crouched beside me, breathing slow and wet and right into my ear. I scrambled back against the wall and swung my phone around again. Still nothing. But then the light hit the back of the cave, and I saw it. Something was inside the rock. Not behind it. In it. The surface was moving, like thick oil swirling just beneath the stone. And in the middle of that swirl was a face. Not human. Too long. No eyes, just hollow pits. A slit where the mouth should be. The face was pushing out from inside the wall, like it was trying to come through, but couldn't. And it was looking right at me. I couldn't move. My whole body locked up. I felt this pressure in my skull, like my brain was being squeezed. It wasn't just fear. It was wrong. Like my insides knew something wasn't supposed to be there. Like I was seeing something I wasn't meant to. The face started to split, slowly, from the slit mouth down, like it was tearing. I heard this high-pitched screech, barely audible, but it made my teeth hurt, like the sound was inside my head. The whole cave shook, and suddenly the whispering came back, only now it was loud, frantic, overlapping. A dozen voices, maybe more. They were saying my name, not shouting it, just repeating it, over and over in different tones, fast, slow, like a chant. Eli, 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 Eli. I don't know how, but I finally moved. I bolted for the exit, crawling on hands and knees, scraping up my palms and knees on the rocks. I didn't even grab my bag. I just wanted out. As I climbed out, I swear I felt something grab my ankle, cold and dry, like dead fingers. But when I kicked back, there was nothing there. Once I got outside, I ran. Didn't look back. Didn't stop until I hit the tree line. I collapsed under some bushes and stayed there until the sun came up. I never went back. I don't even know if I could find that cave again. I've looked at maps and satellite images, and nothing ever looks right. It's like it's not there anymore. Or maybe it never was. Story 9. I grew up in Riverside, California, boring suburb. One summer when I was about 12, the storm drains under our neighborhood became our version of a clubhouse. You know the ones, concrete tunnels under the streets that carry runoff when it rains. Most of the year they're dry, quiet, and supposedly empty. My older brother Tommy was the one who got into it first. He and his two friends, Eric and Jesse, had found a way in through this runoff pipe behind the elementary school. It started tight, like crawling on your stomach tight, but it opened up after maybe 20 feet. You could stand, walk, even spread your arms. That was the appeal. Total darkness, echoing silence, and tunnels going in every direction like some kind of secret maze. No adults, no rules. Tommy told me not to come at first, said it'd be too much for me, but I begged until he gave in. I think he regretted it later. The tunnels had this weird mix of excitement and dread. Every sound felt louder than it should have been. Drips, scurrying rats, or just your own footfalls. You could never tell if someone was coming toward you or behind you because of the way sound bounced around. But we started figuring it out. Flashlights helped. We chalked little arrows at each junction, kept to the wider tunnels. There was one main pipe, we called it the artery, that led all the way out to a creek behind the park, about a 15-foot drop from the tunnel mouth into a pond. That was our emergency exit. Anyway, this happened late July. We went down in the afternoon because we figured it'd be cooler. Tommy wanted to check out a tunnel we hadn't explored before. He'd seen it a few times. Smaller than the artery led off from a side junction, but said it gave him the creeps. Of course, that meant he had to go check it out. Me, Tommy, Eric, Jesse, and two other kids, Mikey and Carlos, were with us. The other guys stayed behind in the big junction, while Tommy and I headed down the side tunnel. It felt different right away. Smaller. Close. We had to crouch after the first 20 feet. The air was heavier, like there wasn't enough of it. You could hear water dripping but couldn't see it, and the walls felt slicker than usual. I asked Tommy if we should turn back. "You scared?" he smirked. "Yeah, kinda," I said. No point lying. He clicked off his flashlight for a second to mess with me. Total black. I shoved him. "Knock it off, man." He laughed, turned it back on, and we kept going. We didn't say much for a while, just moved forward. Eventually, the tunnel opened slightly, tall enough to stand, not wide enough to feel safe. There was this metal grate overhead, half covered in trash. A little light trickled through it. That was the first weird thing. It looked like it was moving. The trash, just shifting slightly, like something underneath was breathing. I stopped walking. Tommy kept going, maybe 10 steps ahead. "You see that?" I said. "See what?" Before I could answer, something moved in the pile. A leg, I think. Pale. Human. It just slid out of the debris like it had been hiding under there. "What the f—" Tommy whispered, stepping back. The pile shifted again, more violently. Something was definitely under there. Then it sat up. I swear to God, this man or thing or whatever it was sat up from under all that garbage. His face was wrong, long, wet, no hair. His eyes were white, like blind or rolled back. He lifted an arm and reached out, slow and stiff, like he hadn't moved in years. Tommy screamed. I froze. I couldn't move. Couldn't breathe. My flashlight slipped from my hand and cracked on the floor, the beam spinning across the tunnel walls. Then it started crawling toward us. Not fast, but not slow either. Somewhere in between, which somehow made it worse. Like it didn't need to rush because it knew we couldn't get away. Tommy grabbed me by the shirt and yanked me backward. "Run!" I finally broke loose from whatever was holding me still, and we ran. I could hear it scraping behind us, dragging itself through water and filth. Not fast, not panicked, just coming. The sound followed us all the way back to the junction. I saw Carlos and Mikey take off the second they saw our faces. Tommy was yelling, "Go! Just go!" behind me. I didn't even look back. I knew that if I looked, I'd see it again, and I wasn't sure my brain could handle that. We bolted down the artery tunnel, flashlights bobbing, shadows jumping. No one said a word. It was all breath and footsteps and splashes. The end of the tunnel felt a million miles away. We saw the light first, coming from the pond outlet, then the opening, then the drop. We didn't hesitate. Every single one of us jumped out into the air. I hit the pond hard, water up my nose, couldn't breathe. I clawed to the surface, gasping, coughing, trying not to panic. Everyone else popped up one after the other. Carlos, Mikey, Jesse, Tommy last. He swam to shore in silence. When we were all out, soaked, muddy, and shaking, I turned to him. "What the hell was that?" He didn't answer right away. Then he looked at me and said, "I don't know." He never wanted to go back after that. None of us did. We told my mom the truth, at least most of it. She grounded us all, told the other parents, and they sealed up the entrance behind the school with a steel plate. Story 10. I was living out of a tent behind a shuttered daycare center in Cleveland when this happened. I had been homeless for about 6 months at that point. Job loss, bad timing, no family left. You know the story. The streets don't give you much room for fear. You get used to things. Rats, cops, the cold. But this still keeps me up when I manage to get a bed. There was this house 2 blocks down on Linwood. Everyone called it the Bone House. Totally sealed up. Boards over every window, old furniture stacked against the doors. No one lived there. No one had lived there for decades from what I could tell. But weirdly, people kept talking about it. Other guys who camped near me, Joe, Marlon, Big T, they'd always say stuff like, "Don't go near the bone house after dark," or "That place watches you." I thought it was just street par-
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Paranoia. Same way people talk about shadow men when they've been off their meds too long. I didn't believe in any of that. But one night, me and this guy Vince I'd been tenting with, we were desperate. It was freezing. And he says to me, "Let's break into that place on Linwood, just for the night." I hesitated, said what everyone else said, "That place is bad news." But Vince laughed it off. "Man, we sleep on cardboard. What's the worst that place could do to us?" We walked over around midnight. That thing looked like it had cancer. The siding was black with mildew. The porch sagged like it had arthritis. All the windows were boarded up tight. Every single one. Someone really didn't want anyone going in, or maybe didn't want something getting out. The front was a no-go, solid wood sealed with bent nails and God knows what else. But Vince found a soft spot at the back. The drywall on the rear wall, like the inner wall of the house, had cracked from water damage and rot. A small hole had already been punched into it. It looked like someone had tried this before. Vince stomped the edge of the hole until it widened. The sound was sickening, like snapping bones. We squeezed through one at a time. It dropped us into what used to be the kitchen. It stank. Mold, piss, maybe old gas. The counters had collapsed under their own weight. But what got me was the silence. Not even street noise made it in. No wind. No creaks. Just still. Vince had a little flashlight, barely stronger than a cigarette lighter. He waved it around, grinning like a kid in a haunted house. "See?" he said. "Just wood and rot." And then we both looked up. There was something at the top of the staircase. It wasn't moving, but we both saw it. Something tall and human-shaped. Not a person. It didn't have any detail. It looked like the suggestion of a person, if that makes sense. Like when you squint at a shadow and your brain fills in the blanks. But we weren't squinting. We were looking right at it. And it was looking back. Vince whispered, "Is that a statue?" But I could hear his voice breaking. He didn't believe that. The beam of the flashlight trembled in his hand. He pointed it straight at the thing. Nothing. The light just seemed to stop at its chest, like it swallowed it. Then it took a step down. We ran. I don't even remember how I turned around or found the hole. I remember crashing into the edge of the busted drywall and hearing Vince yell something behind me. Something like, "It's not walking, it's floating." And then I was outside, falling hard into dead leaves. Vince was right behind me. We didn't talk, didn't stop. We sprinted all the way back to the tents behind the daycare. Didn't even look back. He sat down and lit a cigarette with shaking hands. I didn't say anything. I just stared at him until he finally spoke. "What the hell was that?" he said. I shook my head. He laughed. It was dry, terrified laughter. "You saw it, right? It wasn't just me?" "I saw it." Neither of us slept that night. The next morning I went back, only to the sidewalk. I didn't go near the yard, but I wanted to see it again, in the daylight. I don't know why. All the boards were back in place, even the rear wall. No sign of the hole we had crawled through. It was like we'd never been there. Vince wouldn't talk about it again. 2 days later he left, said he was heading to Chicago. Somewhere with shelters. I never saw him after that. I still don't know what we saw. I don't care if you believe me. I wouldn't believe me either. But there was something in that house.